It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The Iraqi city Ramadi still being contested. As many as 700 Islamic State fighters are believed to still be holed up in and near the recently liberated Iraqi city of Ramadi, making it difficult for Iraqi forces to secure the provincial capital. Much of the city has been destroyed. Tens of thousands have fled and will need to be resettled. But James Jeffrey, a former diplomat to Baghdad, now at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, says he's hopeful the city can resume basic functions soon.
I went into Fallujah a few months after the Marines took it house by house, and most of the city was functioning and back in operation. Now, ISIS may be doing a better job of blowing up buildings as they retreat, a scorched earth policy, but still, I was very impressed with what Fallujah looked like a few months after we went in and took that thing house by house.
Ramadi fell this week to Iraqi security forces backed by U.S.-led coalition airstrikes and local Sunni tribesmen after a six-week assault. The outgoing U.N. envoy to Somalia, Nicholas Kaye, says the country has an unstoppable momentum toward being a stable and secure state. Speaking to VOA before stepping down at year's end, Kaye said reasonable progress has also been made in the fight against al-Shabaab.
A year and a half ago, al-Shabaab controlled many, many significant towns and districts across Somalia. They no longer do. At least 14 of them have been recovered by a combination of the AMISOM and Somali National Army working together. Al-Shabaab, territorially, in a much weaker position than they were before.
Kaye told VOA Somalia has managed to convert a dream of being a federal Somalia into reality. This is VOA News. A U.S. newspaper is reporting the U.S. spied on communications of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu after President Obama promised 2 years ago to curtail such eavesdropping. The two leaders sharply disagreed over the merits of the Iran nuclear deal. Mideast regional analyst Michael Fishback of Randolph-Macon College in Virginia does not see the latest revelation as harming bilateral ties.
Generally agree that both the president and Prime Minister Netanyahu have agreed to put the past unpleasantness behind them. And so I really don't think this is going to be a major breakthrough as far as changing the tenor of American-Israeli relations or the relations personally between the president and the prime minister. Now, what it does for the president's relationship with Congress, which is controlled by the opposition Republican Party, is another matter.
The report said the U.S. targeting of Israeli leaders and officials also intercepted their private conversations with U.S. lawmakers and American Jewish groups. The African Union is threatening to place sanctions on Burundi's rival political factions if they fail to attend peace talks in Tanzania next month, as it pushes all sides to resolve their differences and avert more bloodshed. Meanwhile, President Pierre Nkurunziza warned Wednesday if peacekeepers from the African Union arrive without Burundi's permission, he'll consider the country has been attacked and will respond accordingly. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari Wednesday said his government is open to negotiating with Boko Haram extremists on releasing some 200 schoolgirls abducted by the Sunni insurgent group nearly 2 years ago. Mr. Buhari said the talks will have no preconditions except that Abuja must speak with credible leaders. Reports indicate the U.S. is preparing new sanctions on Iran over its ballistic missile program. One report says about a dozen companies and individuals in Iran, Hong Kong, and the United Arab Emirates will be targeted for allegedly helping Iran develop missiles. The U.S. says Iran test-fired the missiles in October and November, violating a U.N. Security Council resolution. U.S. comedian Bill Cosby was charged Wednesday with sexually assaulting a woman after allegedly giving her wine and pills that left her unable to resist. Kevin Steele is a prosecutor of Montgomery County, Pennsylvania.
These charges stem from a sexual assault that took place on an evening in early 2004 at Mr. Cosby's home in Cheltenham Township, Montgomery County. Mr. Cosby is charged with aggravated indecent assault. This is a felony of the first degree.
The 78-year-old Cosby faces a possible 10 years in prison and a $25,000 fine if convicted. Rare winter floods have killed at least 20 and threatened nearly two dozen federal levees in the Midwestern U.S. states of Missouri and Illinois, which have been hit by a record amount of torrential rains in recent days. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 31st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Central African Republic awaits results from Wednesday's important presidential vote.
Some logistical difficulties were expected, says Suleiman Ndjaye, the head of the African Union Electoral Observation Mission. After those are solved, the vote is going smoothly, he says.
That's VOA correspondent Katarina Hoyer in Bangui. The African Union is committed to helping the Central African Republic return to constitutional rule. Zimbabweans are critical of their president for going on holidays abroad, while most civil servants have not been paid. And a Guinean opposition leader is promising cooperation with President Condé's government.
We discussed the possibility, you know, to have a new agreement among our two parties. And to see during these 5 years coming, if we can help our country, you know, to have more growth and more possibility for the population.
Sidya Touré is a former prime minister and leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party in Guinea. And Americans and tourists will share their New Year's resolutions. The stories plus Marco Woman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Central African Republic awaits results from Wednesday's important presidential and parliamentary elections that they hope will end years of sectarian violence. The turnout was huge, but voting in some areas was marred by widespread logistical problems and claims of vote rigging. But as Katarina Hoyer reports from Bangui, the post-election period might also be difficult to manage.
Expectations were high in Bangui ahead of Wednesday's vote. Outside one polling station in the neighborhood of Castor, near the city center, impatient voters hoping to turn a page on the country's three-year-long conflict lined up before dawn. Jean-Philippe Dora, a lawyer, said the population was ready for change. Dora says over the last 3 years, life has been suspended. People live in poverty. He says that is why we have to choose the right leader, someone who can reconcile and reunite the country and bring hope to the population. Voters at some stations had to wait an extra hour or two due to last-minute logistical problems. We were supposed to open at 6 a.m., says Bienvenu Gubangi, an electoral worker manning a polling station. He says because the material arrived late, the truck didn't bring it here, so the polling station opened later. He says they will catch up. The electoral code says the station should be open for 10 hours. Even if they have to stay open late, everyone will be able to vote. The same determination to vote was seen during the constitutional referendum on December 13th. This time, however, much more is at stake. The new government will inherit a country in which sectarian violence remains rife and rebels and militia groups have yet to be disarmed. It will also have to determine how to assist the estimated 450,000 Central Africans, most of them Muslims, who remain refugees outside of the country. Another 460,000 are displaced within the country, among them 36,000 Muslims that are living in enclaves. In a country still awash in weapons, tensions between the majority Christian population and the minority Muslim population remain a great concern. Some minor problems with the voting were reported in Bangui Wednesday, but after some initial problems, the majority of voters were able to cast their ballots. Some logistical difficulties were expected, says Suleiman Ndjaye, the head of the African Union Electoral Observation Mission. After those are solved, the vote is going smoothly, he says. UN peacekeepers and local police protected polling stations in Bangui. Outside the capital, some polling stations are only reachable by boat or motorbike, making security and observation much more difficult. Among the 30 presidential candidates, three are considered frontrunners. Two of them, Martin Sigele and Anissa Dologele, were prime ministers under late President Ange-Félix Patassé. The third, Karim Mekaswa, is a Muslim who served as a minister under President François Bozizé until he was ousted in 2013 by Seleka rebels. Katrina Hoye for VOA News, Bangui.
The African Union's Peace and Security Council will meet soon to decide when to lift its suspension of the Central African Republic once a legitimate president is chosen and inaugurated. The country was suspended following the 2013 overthrow of President François Bozizé and the subsequent turmoil, which forced rebel leader turned president Michel Djotodia to resign. Commissioner for Political Affairs, Aisha Laraba Abdullahi, says the African Union is committed to its principle of zero tolerance for unconstitutional change of elected governments. In this interview with reporter Peter Clarty, Commissioner Abdullahi voiced hope for a peaceful future for the Central African Republic.
We are confident that the end of the transition in the Central African Republic is coming to an end. And this will hopefully usher in peace, stability and prosperity to the Central African Republic.
The return to constitutional rule in the Central African Republic, how does that play into the AU's quest to ensure constitutionality among member states on the continent, and how will the AU help in this directive?
Well, our instruments, our normative framework are very strong, and we have zero tolerance to unconstitutional changes. We have taken very strict and serious measures on our member states that have violated our instruments. And currently, you know, the Central African Republic is still under suspension because of the coup d'etat that took place in that country. We insist that Africa must be governed and governed properly, that constitutionalism and rule of law should be upheld. But we hope that whoever is elected as the next president of the Central African Republic will ensure further stability in that richly endowed country that has been pillaged and has suffered over a period of time.
Will the African Union help whoever is elected as president? Will the AU help that person in entrenching democracy and the gradual steps the country needs to take to return the country to constitutional rule and to restore peace, law and order?
Our engagement with the Central African Republic would not just remain with the elections. After the elections, we should support the country to rebuild its institutions. As you know, this is one country that was degraded to the extent that most of the institutions have stopped to function. There were gross human rights violations, and most of the things that you would take for granted in other countries were inexistent in the Central African Republic for quite some time. So it's a lot of work to be done, but we remain committed to support this country to return to normalcy after the elections.
How long do you think the suspension that the AU has imposed on the Central African Republic will be lifted now that it appears that the people want constitutional rule?
I'm going by our tradition and practice as the AU. As soon as a legitimate president is elected and inaugurated, the African Union Peace and Security Council will meet and the suspension of the country will be lifted automatically. So it's just a matter of time.
Aisha Laraba Abdullahi is the African Union's Commissioner for Political Affairs. She spoke with viewers Peter Clarty from Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. A Guinean opposition leader is promising cooperation with President Alpha Conde in the president's second term on how to improve the country's economy. Former Prime Minister Sidia Touré of the Union of Republican Forces Party has been a critic of Mr. Conde's government, at times describing the economy in the president's first term as marred by recession and unemployment. Now, Mr. Touré said his decision to collaborate with the government followed a meeting he had with President Conde on December 5th, during which he said they discussed the possibility of how best their two parties can work together during Mr. Conde's second term to grow the economy. As why the sudden change of mind, Mr. Touré said the Guinea opposition has had no strategy to change the government.
I have a meeting with President Conde on 5 of December, and we discussed the possibility, to have a new agreement among our two parties, and to see during these 5 years coming if we can help our country, to have more growth and more possibility for the population, because the last 5 years were wasted. And in my opinion, we have to go to a form of consensus, to help the country to go forward. And that can help, I think, for the next election in 2020.
So are you saying, Mr. Touré, that you have discussed with the president your party and his party should come together?
This is not what I'm going to say, because I have my own group in the parliament, and I will be a center at this time, And our decision in our party is to give more and more advice to this government and more help to change things, because really you see that during the 5 years, you know, from 2010 to 2015, we have a recession in the country. So we didn't have a strategy in the former opposition. And I think if you don't have a strategy, you have nothing to propose to the country. So we're going to have more discussion with the government, more possibility to collaborate and to help to go forward, especially in economic way.
The collaboration you're talking about, this is just your party, not the entire opposition.
No, it's just my party. I can engage only my own party, you know.
So why the change? You were critical of the president at times. Why the change?
Because in opposition, we have no strategy to change the regime. We have only the same way, and this way is a dead end.
Can we say that Sidi Touré is tired fighting the establishment and he wants to join the establishment?
No, this is not the exact way. Sidi Touré is absolutely tired to see, but there is no strategy and opposition to have an alternative for this government.
President Alpha Conde has appointed a new prime minister, Mamadi Yula. What do you make of that? What's your reaction to that appointment?
So I know this gentleman, and I hope he can help. But, the real problem in Guinea is not to appoint somebody. It is to have a group who can work all together and to have determination to make the reforms. And on this way, I hope that this gentleman can help. On this way, I'm waiting to the president for composition of the new government to say if he really want to go in this direction.
Sidi Touré is a former Guinean prime minister and leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party. He was speaking with me from Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. Today's Thursday, December 31st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I am James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout-out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya, and Radio Hot Cocoa in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is 18 minutes past the hour. Ordinary Zimbabweans have criticized President Robert Mugabe and wife Grace for going on holidays in the Far East, while most Zimbabweans say they are unable to enjoy the festive season as they have either not been paid or have no money to do so due to the prevailing harsh economic environment. Irvin Chifera of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from Harare.
Most Zimbabweans have described President Robert Mugabe and his wife Grace as irresponsible, saying going on holiday abroad when the majority of the population is wallowing in poverty showed they did not care about struggling local people. Harare resident Moses Chungwa said it was unfair for the president to go outside the country when people are suffering.
How can you go for a holiday while this country is suffering? It's not good for us.
Another local resident, Andrew Piri, said it was unacceptable of the president to go abroad, especially after he had acknowledged at a party he held for senior government officials that the economic situation in the country was not good. He said while the president is entitled to an annual holiday, he should enjoy it locally, given the prevailing economic situation in the country.
Locally, there are so many resort areas where he can even enjoy with his family than to carry a biggest contingent of about 200 people going to the Far East.
John Moyo, also of Harare, said the timing of the president's holiday to the Far East was wrong, given that most people in the country are suffering and did not enjoy Christmas holidays.
The economy is on its knees. The country is almost cash dry. I'm sure the president could have remained in the country, though on leave, attending to some of the urgent issues like civil servants' salaries, civil servants' bonuses. But when the leader of a nation chooses to go out and enjoy himself with his family, I see it as being very, very arrogant.
But political commentator and Great Zimbabwe University lecturer Joel Makusha said there was nothing wrong with the president's leave as long as it was budgeted for. He said it was proper for President Mugabe to go on leave so that he comes back rejuvenated to deal with the many challenges affecting the nation. His views were echoed by ZANU-PF Central Committee member and parliamentarian Joseph Chuma, who said the president has a right to go on holiday even if some civil servants have not yet been paid.
The point is that even if he's here, are they going to be paid because he's here? That's the fundamental question that you must ask yourself. The responsible minister is running around mobilizing resources so that all civil servants are paid. And so it doesn't really need the president to be in office, I mean, for that to happen.
Chuma noted that the government is still functioning in the absence of President Mugabe. Mr. Mugabe traditionally takes his leave during this time of the year and usually spends it in the Far East, where he also goes for medical checkups. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, estimates 10 million people became sick and 1.5 million died in 2014 as a result of a multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis. Without an effective and aggressive treatment strategy, the CDC estimates the number of cases could rise to 75 million worldwide by 2050. Jessica Burma reports.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, estimates 10 million people became sick and 1.5 million died in 2014 as a result of multidrug-resistant tuberculosis. Without an effective and aggressive treatment strategy, the CDC estimates the number of cases could rise to 75 million worldwide by 2050.
If we don't act promptly, if we don't act now, then the problem of drug-resistant TB will just get worse.
Peter Sigelski is team leader for drug-resistant TB and infection control in the global TB branch at the CDC. He explains that when someone is infected with multidrug-resistant or MDR TB, the bacterium that causes the disease does not respond to two gold standard drugs for treating the illness, isoniazid and rifampicin. So doctors turn to a cocktail of many more expensive but less effective drugs. How many drugs should be in that cocktail was the focus of a study led by Sigelski. Currently, the World Health Organization recommends that five drugs be administered simultaneously. But the study, conducted at 26 sites in 9 countries, found that using 6 drugs could provide a necessary boost in efforts to defeat MDR-TB. Participating countries included Russia, South Africa, Taiwan, and Estonia. Among the 1,100 adult patients in the study with MDR-TB, those who received 6 potentially effective drugs saw a 36% greater likelihood of responding to treatment compared to those who received 5 or fewer drugs. The findings were published in the journal PLOS Medicine. Sigelski says conducting pre-treatment testing also helped to determine which drugs were most likely to be effective against resistant TB infections.
So it was clear from this work that more testing for drug resistance, and especially testing for the full range of drug resistance, would be important so that physicians can choose the most effective drugs based on those laboratory results.
Sigelski says the WHO is now encouraging doctors around the world to do drug sensitivity testing prior to treating their MDR-TB patients. Meanwhile, the Obama administration unveiled an action plan to bring resources to bear in the prompt identification and treatment of patients infected with multidrug-resistant tuberculosis. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
At midnight on Thursday, December 31st, Americans and many others around the world will usher in a brand new year. On the National Mall in Washington, locals and visitors alike share with viewers some of their hopes and resolutions for 2016.
world becomes a better place and my family becomes better too.
It just seems like everyone's so angry all the time, and we need to find peace again within ourselves.
Peace for all the world. My parents is back home in Afghanistan. I wish I can bring them here or having a healthy life.
Get better grades.
Travel more, work less. Get healthy, so spend more time walking and spending more time with family.
Get better at karate.
Lose a little bit of weight, gain some more muscle, and, you know, become a better person.
Be healthy. Peace.
That report was compiled by VOA's Julie Tabor. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Candidates for the FIFA presidential elections are invited for a live television debate. The American global cable and satellite television channel ESPN disclosed in Bristol, Connecticut State in the United States of America. The five candidates for the FIFA presidential elections due on the 26th of February are Jordanian Prince Ali bin Al Hussein, Bahrain's Sheikh Salman bin Ibrahim Al Khalifa, Frenchman Jerome Champagne, Switzerland's Gianni Infantino, and South African Tokyo Sekwale. According to ESPN, their objective is to provide a forum for open and transparent discussion about the future governance of football ahead of the FIFA presidential elections. The debate is scheduled for the 29th of January in the British capital, London. Meanwhile, former French football captain Michel Platini may find himself in hot waters with FIFA after attending the Global Soccer Awards in Dubai, United Arab Emirates on Sunday. Platini, who until recently was FIFA vice president, along with disgraced FIFA president Sepp Blatter, were banned from all football activities for 8 years. According to the FIFA Ethics Committee, Platini and Blatter were found guilty of breaching the FIFA Code of Ethics with regards to a $2 million payment Blatter made to Platini in 2011. Still with FIFA, Uruguay's former FIFA vice president Eugenio Figueiredo is alleged to have received monthly bribes from Argentine sports marketing companies, a court in the Uruguay capital Montevideo disclosed. According to court documents, Figueiredo, who has been South America Football Confederation CONMEBOL president, is alleged to have received each month a $50,000 bribe besides his $40,000 pay as CONMEBOL president. Argentine sports marketing companies Full Play and Tornados y Competencias are alleged to have bribed Figueiredo in return for a monopoly of television sales rights for various South American tournaments. Figueiredo is among 15 top FIFA officials arrested at a luxury hotel in Zurich, Switzerland in May. He is among 25 former and current top FIFA officials under investigation by the United States Department of Justice. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United States has urged Ethiopia to free all journalists detained by the state and stop using its controversial anti-terror law to silence dissent. National Security Council spokesman Ned Price said on Wednesday the U.S. is deeply concerned by the recent arrests of other journalists in Ethiopia. He urged the Ethiopian government to release journalists and all others in prison for exercising their right to free expression. Voters went to the polls in the Central African Republic on Wednesday in a much-delayed election that many hope will end 3 years of violence in the troubled country. Long lines of voters turned out in the capital, Bangui, and although some polling stations opened late, there were no reported clashes or major irregularities. That's it for this Thursday, December 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
Next on Reporters Roundtable. Join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable. I'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the state of press freedom in Africa in the year 2015. So please join us on Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.